Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end-of-season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers and more. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number, as always. Dermot Goulding is in Cabra in Dublin. Dermot, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Joe.
Have you ever heard, Dermot, of anyone feigning a disability in order to skip a queue? I certainly haven't. I can't imagine.
No, I haven't come across it.
Well, that's
I'm 49 years of age and I've been around a bit. Never.
So that's what you were being accused of the other day, was it not, in Emerald Park?
It certainly was, Joe. Certainly was.
Tell us what happened. This was Saturday past.
Sunday.
Okay.
My 9-year-old daughter has been harbouring me all summer to go to Emerald Park. I was putting it off simply because I'm an amputee. I wear a prosthetic leg.
Okay.
And I've been putting it off because the queues are very hard on me, as you'd understand.
Yeah.
And I've nothing against Emerald. I think it's a fantastic park, and I enjoy the atmosphere. I enjoy the rides. But I was putting it off for the simple reason I hated the queues. And then it was suggested to me to just produce my blue disabled parking badge, and they would give quick pass things until I got there yesterday, and you wouldn't believe what I had to go through.
Well, tell me.
I arrived to book in, and I explained to the girl that I had a disability and I produced my blue parking badge, and she said, yeah, that will do. And then she said, what is the nature of your disability? And I told her I wear a prosthetic leg.
Yeah.
And she said to me, would you take it off so you could prove it to me?
Hang on.
I thought she was joking.
Repeat that, because my jaw just dropped and my hearing is affected when my jaw drops. You produce your badge to say you have a disability or you have...
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And come on, take us through the conversation.
She asked me to remove the prosthetic to prove it's where I was disabled. My 9-year-old daughter actually broke out into convulsions of laugh, and she couldn't believe what she was hearing at 9 years of age. Me, as a grown adult, couldn't believe it either, and she stood up and looked over the counter and waited for me to do it. I said, are you for real?
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, maybe not then. So I took her from there. I just said, look, I need to speak to someone in charge here.
But what was she, insofar as you knew, what was she expecting you to do? Are you to pull up your trousers, pull down your trousers, pull them to one side, pull them to another side? What were you...
She said to remove the prosthetic to show it to her.
She wanted you to take off the leg?
Yeah.
And what would that entail?
It would have proved that I had a prosthetic leg.
I presume you only remove your leg when you're going to bed or whatever.
Stuff like that, I don't know.
I don't even know if you have to. But if you had proceeded to do that as she requested, is that an easy process, removing your leg?
It would have got quite embarrassing for everyone around, because I would have had to remove my trousers and reveal my dignity.
Yeah.
To do this.
Okay.
So I think it's just, I don't know, it's an ignorance. I don't know. That's how it turned out, Joe.
Yeah. There was a similar incident not too long ago in Emerald Park. And like Emerald Park, they're brilliant. I've never been, but I absolutely love roller coasters. Absolutely love them. But
it's a fabulous place. It's an absolutely
fabulous
place.
They get fantastic publicity, free publicity, every time they launch a new roller coaster. It was one a few months ago, and I think it was called Brian Boru or something. And they're on the RT News. They're on TV.
Yeah.
They're in all the papers. They bring all the journalists out and give them a free ride. on the roller coaster, and they get great publicity. But when it comes to dealing with a query like this, we can't get them on.
Yeah, anyway, that's where they do drop the ball, so you asked to talk to someone else. To speak to someone in charge, yeah, and hold your jaw for this one. A lady came out after about 10 to 15 minutes. A lady appeared. I won't mention her name. She appears and she. Her first thing was, unless you can prove the person with you is over 18, I can't give you the pass. And she looked directly into my 9-year-old daughter's eyes.
Sorry, what does that, what is the relevance of the person without the disability?
I said, can you explain the logic of what you're saying? And she said to me that you will need someone of the age of over the age of 18 to assist you if I give you this badge. I said, I just don't understand the logic. And she said, it's health and safety. Something could happen to you. And I pointed to other people walking in. Something could happen to him. Something could happen to him. Yeah. Something could happen to him. And why am I any different? Why are you treating me any different? And she just kept telling me, it's health and safety. It's health and safety. It's health and safety. And I couldn't see the logic of it. I still can't see the logic of it. I don't think any of your listeners would see logic in that. So just not to upset my daughter, I said, look, I'll have to take this further. And I went on about my business because, you know, time was ticking on. She was excited. The kid was excited. She wanted to get out into the park, understandably.
And would she have been allowed to go on that ride on her own?
Yeah. No, I would doubt it. As far as I know, they have to be assisted by an adult.
Okay. So they're saying you weren't a capable adult?
Yeah, if I was disabled.
So it's catch 22?
Yeah. That's why I was asking for some logic in what she was saying, and she just kept throwing out health and safety.
And when you go and pay into Emerald Park, is there any indication on the gate or on the ticket or the ticket desk or whatever or on the website that if you have got a disability, you have to be with somebody who's over 18?
I haven't seen it, and I went through the website this morning and I couldn't see anything like that at all.
Okay. Because on the one hand, they're saying they're asking you to prove your disability. They don't believe you.
Yeah.
Now, has there been a history, I don't know, of people going into Emerald Park and I'm not being facetious, putting on a limp or pretending they've only one arm or something? I doubt it. I've never heard of that. Why? Just to get up to the front of the queue. Has anything like that ever happened to you before?
Never.
Okay.
That's why I was so taken aback. I was actually in shock.
And is your blue badge that you produce, is that acceptable in other places as proof of disability?
Yes. I've been to Disney in Paris and in Florida, brought it with me, and there was never any issue. They just took the blue parking badge as it is and accepted that's what it is.
Mm. And it's 52 quid in for adults, isn't it? 47 for children.
It was 43 with booked online each.
Wow.
Okay, it was 86 quid. If all things go, I don't even see that as bad value. It's a great day out. The staff are up to scratch.
Yeah.
On how to deal with these kind of situations, because they really dropped the ball on this one.
Yeah, but there should be more clarity in their rules anyway. And
absolutely.
So you basically gave up and moved on.
I had to, for the sake. Look, I could have stood there arguing, but I think I would have been banging my head off the wall because I wasn't getting any logic or reason to what was going on. So for the sake of the child, I had to move on, and it was her day out, you know.
Okay. So the staff were following the rules, but the rules, it's the rules of the problem. But then Emerald Park was set up by the great late Ray Coyle. He also bought Tato when they were in difficulties, and he expanded Tato, moved from Cool Lookout to Ashbourne, brought in different lines, and then Tato were bought by this massive German company, I think it is. And Tato was 70 years old this year, the crisps, not the actual crisps in the bag. They're still as good as ever. But I can't imagine, because Ray Coyle was often on this station. He was a great entrepreneur. I can't imagine Ray Coyle allowing such disparity in the rules and the implementation of them. Anyway.
That's where, like, you know, for such a big organisation, it knocks me for sakes.
Okay. And they are getting, they get an awful lot of good publicity and they participate in that, but when there's questions to be asked and answered, they're not available. Okay, Dermot, how long have you had the prosthetic? The prosthesis?
This old was 8 years old, so it's okay. I'm well used to it.
And you want to tell me?
I had a tumor in the upper part of my leg, so I had to have it amputated. 1983.
Wow. And what, you got a pain, you developed a pain, and then people got worried and...
Yeah, there was a little lump come up, and then it was decided, geez, we better get him to a hospital quick.
Yeah.
And then it was discovered what it was, and yeah.
Okay. But if Emerald Park come back and say someone with a prosthetic leg, if the roller coaster... Well, it could happen, eh? If a roller coaster gets stuck, we're all stuck.
That's my point, yeah. That's why I was pointing to other people going in, but what if something happens to him or him or him?
Okay. Is your daughter okay? Is she okay?
Yeah. You know what? She's fine. She's a resilient little thing. And, you know, she was... It didn't help her day because she was kept saying to me all day, are you okay, Dad? Are you okay?
Yeah.
Of course I was sore. Like, the longest queue I was in was 50 minutes. And for me to stand in a queue for 50 minutes, I'm standing on one foot.
Yeah.
And it's not easy. It's sore. And she could see this, obviously, in my face. And she kept saying to me, Dad, do you want to go home? I don't mind. And, you know, that was just the goodness of her.
Okay. Dermot Goulding. Thanks indeed, Dermot. And stay well. And your lovely daughter as well. It's Dermot Goulding in Cabaret. Joe at rt.ie 51551 is the text number. Aoife Coogan in Dublin. What's happened?
Hi, Joe. How are you? Thanks for taking the time to have me on air.
What happened?
So, basically, I am a motorcyclist who's fallen victim to a bout of theft. It's an ongoing issue in our community. And what we talk about it within the motorcycling world, it's very seldom discussed outside of our community. So just last year, I had a motorcycle stolen from our garage home. Mm-hmm. And they've been back as recent as Saturday previous, four of them in the dead of the night, in the early hours of the morning. And they were here for almost 15 minutes with no fear of our home security. They were as brazen as you like, and it's terrifying. And it's really a major issue for us, because even going as far as to say that we're reluctant to go out into the city centre because the most recent wave of attacks have been during the day. They approach us while we're stopped at the traffic lights. They'll have bolt cutters in hand, and they're not fearful at all of the eyes of the law, because they often can be seen on the back wheel on Parnell Street touting the Garda when they're on foot or in their squad cars, because they're powerless. They're unable to chase them. The laws don't support them to go and proactively pursue these guys. So it's a major, major issue for us at the moment. And it's something within our community that a lot of people are starting to sell their motorcycles because they're just so worried that they're going to have these home invasions. And what then, you know, because you can't retaliate, you can't do anything. You're completely powerless as a civilian. So it's very frustrating for us.
So you're saying, Aoife, there's been an upsurge in motorbike thefts.
Exactly, yeah. And Dublin, obviously being the hotspot and the capital, we are hit more than anywhere. It does happen quite often in Cork, but it's a daily occurrence now in Dublin, and it's now become a global issue, because not only is it happening to our own residents, but we have international tourists coming and having their motorcycle stolen. So there's one quite regularly. I think there's at least one a month. There was a German guy targeted just last week in the city centre. I know the locals are rallying around. When I say the locals, I mean the local riders like myself. We're keeping our ears to the ground to see if this bike will turn up. But again, like, there's not really a deterrent.
Are they stealing the bike? The bikes for their own recreation or to sell them quickly?
A number of different things. The primary thing that they're stealing the bikes for, the primary reason, albeit, is to joyride around, have the crack, go up the back wheel, as I said, in the city centre, across fields. They're very quick to get around, and they wreck them. They completely wreck them. They're posting on social media for clout with their peers. They're selling them on. Our bike, for context, the one that was stolen last year, was sold 3 times within 2 weeks in the various areas in Dublin. We were able to track it for every day of those weeks because there were so many motorcyclists within the capital, and it was cited on numerous occasions. So we were able to track it right down to a house. But again, our hands were tied. You can't do anything. It's not like you can just walk up and say, "Hi, can I have my bike back?"
Yeah, well, what did happen when you tracked it down to the house?
We phoned the local Garda station, and they said they were too busy. We tracked it to a house in Darndale, and they said they were too busy. When we phoned our local Garda, who was from Masfarnham, who was managing the case, she was really helpful, and she said, with the utmost, they should not have said that to us. She was pursuing it actively and gave us lots of good advice on home security, etc.
Yeah, but it was a bit late. But did they say to you, don't go near Darndale, don't go near the house?
No, they didn't. They didn't say so much, because we just went out in the car, obviously thinking with our helmet and key and jacket in the back that we'd be able to get the bike around. But of course, like, one of the guys who was sat on the wall with our bike, he started walking over, and this was a man in his probably 50s, so, you know, and he was a larger than life man. So I thought, well, we best, for safety, get out of here. It doesn't look like we can just walk up to a group of people and
You actually saw your bike?
Exactly, it was right in front of us. It was a matter of probably 30 yards away from the car.
And did you say to him, that's my bike?
Well, I don't know if you know that particular area, but it's probably the easiest to get out on a motorcycle on the back wheel, because in a car, the ramps are enormous and they're the full breadth of the road. So you wouldn't be doing anything in quick fashion. So it didn't seem like the safe option at that time. But it was sighted numerous times, as I said, in the following 2 weeks in and around the city centre quite often. On Capel Street and Parnell Street, we have lots of videos that we got sent by one of our friends as a delivery driver. So he kindly shared the footage with us of the bike just going up and down, taunting the Lewis drivers, with their bowls cutters in hand in the middle of the day on a Sunday afternoon on a Sunday. So they're fearless, these guys, you know.
So what happened? What happened to your Darndale bike for a finish?
So it finished up, it was stolen from us, if I recall, in the May time, and it was recovered in late June in the back of a house during a drugs raid in Clondalkin. And the guards then came to us, took the keys from us just to make sure it matched. And of course, they had changed the fairings, they're the plastics on the side of the bike, which give it that colourful look. So they had just merely switched them out, so it would be harder to recognise it. But the bike, there aren't many of that particular model in the country, so it was easily identifiable.
And how much is it worth?
So the bike itself was worth 8,500 at the time, but to buy another one new and to put all the parts that were on it, so, you know, you're talking about 12,500-13,000.
And does insurance cover anything?
So we did get the insurance back on it, thankfully, but they did steal 4 helmets from us in the same period, one of which was worth almost €1,300, and I'd only bought it just over a month previous. And none of those items were covered by insurance, so naturally they come out of our own pocket. You know, the bike was used daily as well to get to and from work, so that was another element where we were out for the best part of 2 months without a bike.
So you say is this a recent phenomenon where there is bikes being... I know expensive bikes have always been...
Yeah, it's not that it's recent. It's just that it's become more rampant. It's really like a pandemic for us motorcyclists. We cannot go anywhere without worrying about our bikes, particularly in the city centre. And again, living in the suburbs of Dublin, you know, there's nowhere that's untouchable for these guys. They come right across town and they arrive in the dead of the night. They left our house the first time, the four of them on the bike together. Mm-hmm. Each time that they've come and they tried to target us, they came onto electric motorcycles, what we call motorcycles, but actually they're Surons. You don't need a motorcycle license per se.
Okay. And
often with is the case, if one of these guys gets injured, the guards, if they may have pursued them, ended up suspended themselves. So, you know, the risks are far bigger or higher on the Garda themselves than
the stay there for a second. For Joe at RT.ie, Thomas, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe, how are you?
When was your bike stolen?
About 3 weeks ago now, and actually sounds like a very similar story to Aoife there. Mine was up in Tala, and it was secured in an underground car park, and they got in around 4 a.m, two guys with masks. There's loads of CCTV footage of it. They were as brazen as you like, and they had bolt cutters went through the back lock and then smashed off the disc lock. And that was the third attempt on the bike that I'm aware of. I'd only gotten it back from the shop because they broke the ignition on it. So I had to pay €600 to get that fixed. And I had it back, I think, 4 days, and they got it again. So.
Okay.
And they had, I had to drill off the disc lock before, about a year ago, because they went and tried to smash the disc lock off. And so, yeah, they've been basically targeting it. So it's really frustrating at the moment. You know, I echo what Aoife says, that you kind of just can't. It's crazy that you can't have a motorbike.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go into town, the risk is incredibly high. And I can't just, you know, the inability to buy a motorbike and have it downstairs is crazy. But that's the way it is. And the guards responded quickly, and they said what I expected them to say, is that they can't do anything about it. Their hands are tied. They want to be able to stop these guys, but they just can't do it. And that's
Why not?
They're not protected. They're not protected from the government.
If they have to chase them, is that what you're saying?
Not allowed to chase them. They're probably not allowed to use any kind of excessive force on these guys. The guys that took the bike looked like the exact type of guys that you'd expect. They had Canada Goose jackets on, balaclavas. You spot them a mile off. That's who came in for the bike. And similar to Aoife, they were kind of on the corners outside as well, on their little scooters and their little motorbike thing.
So you have there's CCTV, is there?
Loads of CCTV footage. They took about 6 or 7 minutes to get the bike. They were just brazenly walking through the car park. It was 4 a.m. now when they got mine, so there was nobody there, but they've come in at all times before. So I don't even know if it was opportunist or if it was targeted. I kind of think it was targeted, you know. I think they're keeping an eye on it. So, yeah, it's just
And from from what you're hearing in the biking community, is there an upsurge in targeting bikes and stealing bikes?
Well, I knew for a while that they kind of wanted mine, and then once it was stolen, I joined. There's a couple of Facebook groups on it, and I was shocked to see that there's probably one stolen a day, at least. It's crazy. You go onto these groups, and every single day, it's actually embarrassing now, every single day you see somebody posting that their bike has been stolen in broad daylight, lots of times with videos in the middle of town, and these guys are just cutting it there in front of everybody. So, I do think there's an upsurge. I think what it is that they're realising that the guards are powerless to do anything. And the more that disseminates amongst the community of thieves, and they know everybody's getting away with it, then there's absolutely no incentive for them to stop. They might as well keep doing it. That's what's happening.
And do you think they're stealing the bike for money or for thrills?
I'd say it's probably both. I have a feeling that I haven't seen or heard anything about mine since, but I see them joyriding them around. So I'd say they do it sometimes to ride around. Sometimes it's probably kept hidden away for some kind of other activity, a bank theft or whatever. And then some of them are probably shipped up to Belfast for sale. So I'd say it's a mix.
Okay, say there, John Wills. John, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
What happened in your case?
What happened in my case? And I couldn't resist but call in when I heard your other callers. So I my clinic is on Mount Street there in Dublin too. And I'd gone into work as I always do on a Wednesday there. I parked up the bike. This is on the 7th of the 8th. And I parked up the bike outside the office, doing my day's work. Mm-hmm. And around just after 6 in the evening, my a colleague across the way, I heard a shout. And he was a very urgent kind of, John, you know? And
yeah, okay. Yeah,
I thought someone had collapsed or something had happened. But sure enough, he came in and he said, look, there's someone at your bike. So the two of us darted down as quick as I could. And by the time we got out the door, the bike was gone and not a trace. And yeah, and then afterwards, the lady across the way had taken a bit of video footage of it, and you could see them. There were two motorcycles, from what I can recall, with guys who would have come on the back of it and then jumped off. And one got on it, and the other one rolled it, pushing the back box that was on it, rolled it away. Within about 20 minutes before, quicker than I could report it stolen, Joe.
Yeah.
I got a call from a number I didn't recognise, and it was a Garda. Brilliant. A Garda to say that they had retrieved it.
Brilliant, brilliant.
So, fair play there.
Wow.
However, I suppose we're left in a situation where it looks like they took a bike. They obviously did whatever they did with it. We're unsure even whether they could have started it. Possibly not. But they took it away, and I'm now faced in a situation where I actually don't know the fate of the bike, Joe. And the reason I don't know the fate of the bike is that it's looking like it's going to be a potential economic write-off given the damage that was done.
So, and did the Gardaí tell you under what circumstances they recovered the bike?
No, and to be fair, I appreciate they're very busy, but I've been trying to get that information, and I've been looking for callbacks, and I haven't yet gotten the circumstances, because obviously at the time you're completely thrown, you know, you don't know what are the exact circumstances under which it's been retrieved, but it was retrieved. And as I say, taken away, went, you know, I think they had to take it for some sort of forensics to look at it. But yeah, then I went to the, I went up to collect it, and sure, there was no way it was going to be rideable away, and it just wouldn't, there was no way the damage done is substantial.
Yeah, but did you actually see the bike?
I saw the bike.
In the Garda station? And
no, I didn't. I saw it at the pound. Actually, a very, very kind, very Derek Bean, a very gentleman man.
I know Derek.
He showed me it.
How did the guards get your number to ring you?
Well, what must have happened, Joe, I don't know, but I can only assume that what happened was, however they identified that there was a bike, maybe someone rang in to say they saw some suspicious activity, or maybe the guards themselves saw it, but the reality of it was they probably ran the plate, and I'm sure you can get, they have details, ways of getting numbers, and my mobile will be attached, you know. But like, that's what you're faced
and
with.
Why
and
are like, you, but John, why are you so pessimistic about getting your bike back in any state?
Well, I suppose I would hope to get it back, but right now, I suppose, Joe, it's slightly agnostic and the jury's out on whether the degree to which the insurance will be able to cover that, given the damage. The damage is north of 5,000.
Oh, wow.
Which was cut. Yeah, yeah.
So it's a BMW.
And that's what we're BMW 800, yeah. Like with all the, what I say, all the bells and whistles, probably all the immobilizer, like a lot of stuff would be there to try and stop it being easily started.
Yeah, okay.
But it doesn't matter, once they can roll it away, I suppose that's the issue. They can do that.
Yeah.
And I, just like your other caller, I think I was not part of any Facebook groups, so I actually didn't have my finger on the pulse, just vis-a-vis the fact that this was an issue. And it's only now that it's been taken. I've been actually Googling around, and you go, oh, my God. I think there was back in March, a group of bikers did do a run up the city to highlight this as a kind of highlight the issue of bike theft. That seems to be happening fairly hand over fist very commonly. And the not wearing of the helmet seems to do with the police will not pursue them. So there's a difficulty with pursuing them, because obviously if something were to happen, I suppose it's all that side of it as well. So the guards, as good and as great as they try to do what they can do, they seem, unfortunately, to have their hands tied vis-a-vis that.
Yeah.
You know?
And I'll go back to Aoife now. And Thomas, finally. Aoife, again, why is this such a I know boys follow them for stuff. Why is there such an upsurge? Does anyone know why there's an upsurge?
Because it's so easy for them.
Okay.
It's so easy. There aren't really any repercussions for these guys other than they say, oh, well, if they're that bit younger, if they're under 18, it's just another mark on their rap sheet.
Okay.
There aren't spaces in the prisons. Whereas in the UK, they have a completely different strategy. They're able to, one, pursue, but two, they're able to, you know, tactfully take them down off their bikes. So they often, you see videos online of them colliding, and it's quite forceful. And they're, you know, they're given far more authority in how they address the situation. So it's just the laws, the mandate needs to change to support our Gardaí. While they've been really helpful in my case and in plenty of other cases, again, their hands are tied, and it's just the frustration. It's just going to be ongoing unless things really, really ramp up and change to stop these guys and make it really hard for them, you know, in what we do to tackle this crime going forward. And as I said, it's not just us motorcyclists that are affected. Like, I live with my mother-in-law, and it's quite frightening to have some people around your house at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know? So it's where do we go from here is the big question.
Okay.
And while that other gentleman was saying about his bike getting back, often the case is if the bike is brought back to you and if it's not fully written off, you have to repair it yourself, and it's very costly, as you would imagine.
I see that. Where's Mike Robinson? Mike, good afternoon. Joe at RT.ie. Mike, what happened?
Good afternoon, Joe. Well, I just won't repeat what everybody's been saying, but I just wanted to add to the point that apart from Irish Facebook pages reporting Irish stolen bikes, there's also international bikes, visitors coming to Ireland on the back of all of the promotion, you know, tourist board, Wild Atlantic Way, et cetera, et cetera, sending a very bad signal to international travellers, not just bikers, Ireland in general. You can't leave anything outside without getting damaged or stolen. I just wanted to make that point. You know, so it's in the country's interest, tourism in general, bikers particularly, but tourists in general. It's horrendous. Social media is full of it. Every day, Joe. Every day.
Okay. And is there, do I know the answer? Is there a dedicated, is it of such volume at this stage that there would be a dedicated Garda unit focusing on? Because there seems to be a particular MO to all of this, and a particular group that are doing it, or the demographic or whatever.
Certainly a demographic, but I mean, they're targeting everything: scooters, bicycles, motorcycles. They're the Black North Face Brigade. Aoife and others have said, they're guys doing wheelies down the street. The recent riots there up in Coolock there over the immigrants. I mean, rent a crowd were coming in from passing my house on their back wheels, on their electric bikes. Same crowd.
Yeah. Brazen.
Same crowd. Just thuggery. Thuggery.
Yeah.
Brazen, yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the guards, I do feel sorry for the guards, even though I have my own, I can be just as critical as everybody of the guards, but I understand those guys are risking their lives. They're hauling guys into court, and then the judges, who seem to be completely out of touch with society, and letting these guys off with sometimes as little as a slap on the wrist. Now, I know there's a wider issue with places to put them, et cetera, et cetera. But if we don't do something, this is just the tip of the iceberg. That, you know, don't want to think Ireland is turning into the Wild West. You know?
And what happens if you, and I'll put this to the fore, if you been abroad on your bike? So you have to be as vigilant abroad as you are in Ireland.
I was in Italy 2 weeks ago.
John, Mike,
I was in Italy I was in Italy 2 weeks ago in one of the biggest motorcycle festivals in the world, Ducati Week, and I left my keys in my bike. And the guys leave their helmets on their bikes and walk away for a few hours and come back, and nothing is touched.
John, have you been abroad on your bike? Or?
No, I haven't, unfortunately.
Okay,
yes,
Thomas, have you? Thomas? Or Aoife?
No, I haven't been in mine, Joe, but I've been in France recently, and I saw there's motorbikes parked on the street everywhere. They're just much more common over there. So, you know, they stand out a little bit more over here, and that's probably why.
And Aoife, at one stage, you said they were stealing bikes in traffic. What does that mean?
Exactly. So just as most recent as just last week, as it happens as well, a friend of mine, she was in the city centre in front of the convention centre, and she has three young daughters, and she often takes one of them on the back of the bike with the full protection.
Okay.
And they were stopped at the traffic lights when a scooter pulled up again with two on it, one with the bolt cutters, no helmets, balaclavas, tracksuit and trainers, and they were intimidating her at the traffic lights. Again, she had her eight-year-old on the back of the bike. So imagine from a female point of view how terrifying that would be on your own, aside from having your child on the back of the bike. Now, they didn't get her bike, but they did take plenty of photographs of her, and they did follow her for a bit. So, I mean, it's very serious. Like, unless we do something, and it's, you know, I was one of the organisers of said protests that the other gentleman mentioned. And again, while we again in our communities are talking about it all the time, and it's a major issue, and as that other man mentioned, like the international tourists, they're talking about us as well in a very bad light.
Okay.
Unless it reaches Helen McEntee's desk and says,
let's ask the Garda press office if they notice an upsurge, or is there any graph that can tell us what's going on. Okay, but that's the reality from the four of you there. Mike Robinson, John Wilt, Thomas and Aoife Coogan, good morning.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, back to Emerald Park, formerly Tato Park, Ireland's biggest roller coaster emporium, and a lot more beside. Mary, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
What happened? What happened?
Yeah, so I went to Emerald Park with my kids and my sister-in-law last month.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought my consultant letter with me. I have MS.
Okay.
So that was fine. So I went in, and my sister-in-law, who has a cane, but she doesn't have an actual name on her disability yet. They're still trying to find out what it is. But she had a letter from her consultant. And when she was walking in, they said to her, what's wrong with you then? Is it a spinal thing or what is it?
Yeah.
So that was the first thing. So she was a bit like, well, I don't know why I'm being questioned when I have my cane and I have my letter. Yeah. The health and safety guy came out to run through the health and safety rules. And I said to him, obviously, I'm not going to be getting on any roller coasters or anything like that myself. Mm-hmm. But I will have to queue with my kids. And when I went to Legoland and when I went to Disneyland, I was able to queue in the fast track and then sit at a seat while they went on the ride. Is that okay? And he said, yeah, that'll be fine. It'll be fine. So we went down to the first ride and we queued up in the fast track. And when we got to the top of the fast track queue, I was told, no way, I have to get on the ride myself for the kids to use the fast track. So I said, well, I said, I'm not going to be able to do that. I said, I'm not going to be able to do that. I have MS. I'm not going to be able to get on the Cool Cullen or whatever it was. And they said, well, I get the manager. So the manager came out and she said to me, what's the problem? And I explained it to her. And she said, well, why can't you get on a ride? You can walk, can't you? And I was like, what? I said, MS is more than just like your legs. I said, MS, it affects everything. I said, that's never been said to me before. And she said, well, that's the rules and it's tough and that's the way it is. So, I was really put out by it. So I rang them the next day.
Okay.
And I said to them, look, you need to look at your rules because they're not making sense. Like, I don't go to Emerald Park so I can go on all the rides. I'm going because my kids are going. And I have to queue with them. Like, that was an hour queue. So for me to queue that hour made a big difference to me with my legs and stuff. So they said, oh, yeah, email us and we'll deal with it. So I emailed them. Mm-hmm. I told them that the staff member's name who said that to me about, well, you can walk, can't you? And that was completely ignored. And I was told that the response was, well, we're not looking at it. That's the rules. And we don't care what Legoland do or Disneyland do. This is what we do. So I said, well, look, I'm really disappointed with that. Could you at least do some training with your staff so that they know how to deal with people with disabilities, because that's not really something you say. And again, I got the same, it was like a generic response. We are not looking at our policies. That's the way it is. And tough, basically. I put it on Twitter and I put it on Instagram and it was ignored. So when I heard that you were talking about it today, I just thought like when I went to Legoland, I didn't go on any of the rides there either, but I was able to queue up with my kids. I was able to sit at a seat.
I understand. And what was said to your sister-in-law who had a cane when she What was that line?
The line was, what's wrong with you then? Is it a spinal thing?
Because she had a cane, okay.
Because she had a cane, and she had the letter that they required, but...
Okay, and what was your consultant's letter, Mary? What did that say, so to speak?
Well, if mine said I have MS, I have mobility issues, cognitive issues, they went through the various different things. That's what mine said. So that was fine. They didn't question what was wrong with me until I got to the top of the queue and they said, well, you can walk, so I don't know why you can't get on the right.
Well, what was your consultant saying in that letter, Interadio? What was he saying that you shouldn't, that you could go on?
He was saying that I have a disability, so that I should be able to go in and I have a disability and confirming the disability that I have. And okay. That it was mobility. It was a mobility issue.
But, okay, and you can walk, so why can't you get into the long queue? That was said to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I tried to explain. I said, it's the standing on my feet and the pain on the bottom of my feet. And they were just like, well, they're the rules. Like, we don't care what they do in other places. This is what we're doing.
Okay.
And I just thought, like...
It hasn't happened anywhere else. That's your point as well. That's the litmus.
I went to Disneyland. And it doesn't make sense. Like, I'm there, okay, I have a disability, whatever, but I'm there because of my kids. I'm not there because of myself, so that I can go on. And same as my sister-in-law. And she's like, I don't think you should be questioning people's disabilities when they have what you require.
Yeah, I'm baffled. Is there a phenomenon in Ireland or anywhere else of people going up to try and skip a queue and say, I have MS or putting on a limp or pretending to have a prosthesis? I've never heard of it.
I would have to say, from my point of view, I have a disabled badge, which I only applied for 3 months ago because I didn't want to be judged, and I do get judged because if I don't have my cane with me, people think, well, why are you parked there?
Yeah.
Like, you do get judged, no matter what people say. Okay. But even if Emerald Park had come back and even lied to me and said, yeah, well, look at it, it'd be something, but they totally disregarded what I said.
Okay. Thanks, Mary. Thanks indeed. How are you now, Mary? Generally, MS is progressive, is it?
Yeah, it's progressive. Yeah, I'm okay. You just get on with it, don't you?
Yeah. Fair play to you, old pal. Thanks, Mary. Thanks, Mary. Willie McGill, now, I know you're visually impaired. Has that germane to what you're looking for now? You're trying to find a song. So obviously you're a good radio listener because it was played on radio. Tell us your quest, Willie.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for getting back to me there. Basically, Joe, we're driving back from a tie in County Kildare in May 95, would you believe, and I heard a song on radio on 2FM, would have been back then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And a beautiful piece of music, but...
And how do you...
I'm trying to track it there lately, Joe, without any success.
Yeah, but Willie, how do you recall May 1995?
Because it was the it coincided with one of the greatest Carlos rally weeks ever. Actually, this in relation to my Munda rally, Stephen Murphy. It was very, very...
So you heard this song?
Yeah.
And
now, we tried to...
How did it come back into your head 30 years later?
It has come in sort of in... came in and out of my head since, Joe, up and down the years, you know. And I always just said to myself, she'll get anywhere at any time, you know, it was a good track. Until I tried to get it. Lately, really, you know.
What does it sound like?
I can only hum some of it to you, Joe, but...
Yeah, hum
that's any good.
Hum away.
La, la, da, 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 da. La, da, 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 da. La, da, 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 da. La la da 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 la da 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 la da 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 da. That's like that. That's the air.
Yeah.
We tried to put the lyrics, but unsuccessfully. You know.
Well, have you any? Have you any?
Nothing. The only the reason I sort of rang you.
Were there any? Sorry, was there any words in it?
Oh, there was words, Joe.
But no, but are any? Remember any key words? A phrase? Help me here, will you? Help me.
Well, believe it or not, Joe, I can't.
Okay, well that's fair enough. Give me the.
I mean, I tried everywhere.
Say again.
I tried a lot of.
I know. Okay.
Record stores and the usuals, and tried even the radio station down here in KCLR. And
do you go into a record store and start humming?
No. Well, there isn't, would you believe it, Joe, at the moment, there's no record store as such in Carlow.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I actually rang a guy in Portlaoise there, but they couldn't help me either. I thought it was maybe an Irish solo artist or something like that, you know. It's obviously someone that didn't make it.
Okay. And you can't, remember, William?
Yeah.
Concentrate. I know you are concentrate. Is there any phrase in it? Was the word love in it? I'm like, God, that doesn't narrow anything down, does it? Was there any phrase in it that?
Just got to let you know, I thought was at the end of it. I just got to let you know.
Give me the air again, as best you can, will you? Give me the air. Because you're a good owl. You had a good few chords there. Give me the air again, would you mind?
La, la, da, 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 la, da, da, da. I just got to let you know. That's basically.
Okay.
That's the basic of the song, you know.
Do you think it was a band, a male singer, female singer?
Oh, male. Oh, definitely male, Joe.
Okay, well, hang on. Now you're giving me more information. Male?
Definitely male.
Was he a balladeer or?
Sounded like a balladeer. Sounded sort of like a balladeer, yeah.
Okay.
That's what I said, he might be one of our own. But
you reckon whoever he was is good, didn't make it, otherwise you would have...
No, look, the guy could have. I'm not quite sure, but
okay.
I hope he did.
Okay, well, you've done... I'm not being facetious. Just one short burst of it, and then we'll take a break and see if anyone got any ideas. Go ahead.
Right. Okay, Joe. La, la, da, da, da. La, da, da, da. La da 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 da, la da 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 da. That ballady sort of thing, you know.
Well, Willie, just let people. We're not going la la la. But I reckon if we can't find it, you should record. It's a lovely air. Stay with us, Willie. Does anyone know the song? Help! Help! Help!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Somebody said it sounds like a band, First Aid Kit, Silver Lining. Another person says, Willie, is it Blue, Best in Me? Have we got that on the cart while we have?
I don't ever want to lose this feeling. I don't want to spend a moment apart. 'Cause you
Now, should Half of Blue weren't even born in 1995, were they? Is that the song? Well, that could be a cover. Willie?
No.
No, okay.
What's the first one you called out there, Joe?
I don't know. I'll get it
first
again.
First Aid, Silver Lining.
Yeah. We'll try and get that up. Another one says, is it Celine Dion? The wonderful Celine Dion. Because there is a line in that, you saw the best there was in me. You gave
me I know, yeah.
You'd remember.
So, it was definitely a male artist.
I play more of that, it's gorgeous. You gave it back
to me. Oh, lovely, yeah. No star was out of reach. You stood by me and asked the toll.
I had your love, I had it all. Okay. Larry Gogan will never be dead in the afternoon when we're playing this wonderful music. Someone said, is it the wonderful... Well, Codaline aren't old enough either, Stephen. But they're only... Is it Codaline? Because they have a line, 'cause you brought the best out in me.
Oh,
great song.
great song, but they wouldn't have been around anything, Joe, would they?
No.
No.
Hold the line. They stole the show apparently at Electric Picnic. They were incredible, real music. Electric Picnic. Who else? Alan Furlong says, is a Careless Whisper by what's the name? George Michael. Well, that's the second one. My screen has gone disappearing. A number of people said, "Hello, is it Hello by Lionel Richie?"
No.
Okay. Is it Boyzone? Because they were around 1995. Boyzone, and apparently in The Keys to My Life, there's some familiar lyrics.
Rain on the window covers the trace of all the tears that I've had to waste, and now I'm missing your soul, and I won't let you go away.
It's definitely not that, will you? We can't.
Wouldn't be, Joe. No.
Okay.
I know they were around it in 95, okay. All right.
Let Loose, Best Than Me, as you'd have suggested. Let Loose.
That's it, Joe.
What?
That's it, Joe.
Hi, Joe. Are you sure that's it?
That's it, Joe.
Who suggested that? Brilliant. Brilliant.
Good man, Joe Duffy.
Well, it's Let Loose. Let me see. Well, let's find out a bit more about them. Let Loose is a British pop. We discovered now they were all born in 2004. Ah! You see. They were the years active were 1993 to 1996. So that fits, doesn't it?
That's it, Joe.
They got back together for the reunion for a year in 2008, then 2014, and then 2023. The members are Matthew James Pateman, Rob Jeffrey, and Lee Murray. They were a trio.
Wow.
He was involved in... Matthew Pateman was involved in Bad Boys, Inc. Remember, they were a British boy band from 1993.
Yeah. Right.
Let's find out. The single is called... What is the single called? It's called Best in Me. Did it chart in 1995, I wonder?
I don't know. That no Joe.
Okay, we'll play a few more. We can't play much more now, or we'll be done under the Trade Descriptions Act that Liveline has turned into a music show. And they'll be killing here in the canteen. Killing. Murdering. There'll be bananas flying in every direction from the people in the music department saying, what are you doing taking over the music? It's called Best in Me.
Wait, Let Loose.
I wonder, did it chart? Yeah, it has a video. I don't care if I sound kind of foolish. I know that. I don't care if I sound kind of weak. I'm not ashamed just to say how I'm feeling. I've fallen head over heels. Now, what I want you to do now, Willie, is I want you to do La 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 for me. And then we'll segue into the song and see is there any known connection between what you're singing and what Let Loose are singing. Go ahead, Willie.
La 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 da 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 la da 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 la la.
Oh yeah. Come in again, will you? Come on, join in.
Yeah.
It's lovely, yeah?
La, 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 la,
Okay. A little bit. Brilliant. Winnie, you had the tune anyway. Fair play to you.
Yep.
The band's first album, Let Loose, peaked at number 20 and sold 100,000 copies. The album release was followed by the single One Night Stand, which peaked at number 12. The final track to be taken from the album was the ballad Best in Me, written by Willie McGill in his sleep one night, but unfortunately he slipped out of his imagination and landed in the imagination of his name was the composer Wermerling. This guy from Let Loose, he wrote this song in his bedroom, Willie, when he was 15, and it broke into the UK top 10. Peaking at number 8. It's not incredible.
Well done.
You're a good old voice.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah, I remember you when I make it, Joe.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
By the way, you were brilliant in Carlow recently, Joe.
You what?
You were brilliant down in Carlow.
Oh, it was
recently.
A good laugh, yeah. It was a funny Friday. Yeah, it was a great laugh. And the people.
Fabulous, yeah.
And
lovely,
the people of Carlow. Well, if we're on the road again with Funny Friday, I hope you'll come along.
Ah, oh, brilliant, yeah, absolutely,
okay.
Joe.
Okay,
thank you very much, Joe.
Thank
you,
Willie.
What it means to me.
Let loose. You brought out the best in me, Willie. Fair play to you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
There he was on Saturday morning reading my favourite Irish newspaper at the moment, the Belfast Telegraph. Sam McBride and Alison Morris, two of the great writers there, and obviously has a relationship with the Irish Independent. And I read a letter from a man called Stephen Patterson. Stephen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And it was a fantastic letter because it brought me back to my childhood and a man called Ferguson. But what's your plea in the letter, Stephen?
Yes, it's about to get a dedicated museum for her own Harry Ferguson.
And is there not one up in Northern Ireland?
There's not, unfortunately. There's bits and pieces, you know, but no museum, you know, dedicated to him himself.
And have you any idea, Stephen, where you might like it? What would go into it? Is there much memorabilia about this, the genius that was Harry Ferguson?
Yes, there would be so much information and all about him. There's no problem to sell a whole museum. You know, there's that much, you know, because most people would consider him to be the father of the modern agricultural tractor.
Of course
there's
he is.
So much interest in him. Yes.
He was nearly an industrial revolution in himself with his inventions. And Stephen, is there a Ferguson? I know it became Massey Ferguson, but is there a Ferguson society? Given, tell us a little bit about him, where he's from. You live near his place of birth.
I don't know. I'm from Castledaird.
Okay,
but it's not, you know, but a few miles up the road, all right, up the motorway and all. Harry Ferguson himself was born outside Dromore in County Down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's a special anniversary this year. That was the sting of your letter, wasn't it? The 90th.
It was actually last year there, but the first tractor that Harry Ferguson built, the only tractor built in the whole of Ireland, was the black prototype tractor, the tractor that actually brought the Ferguson system to the world.
Yeah.
And it was completed in 1933 in Belfast.
Okay. So we're approaching the 90th anniversary.
We're
just past it, actually.
We're just past it, yes.
And do we know, Stephen, are there any examples, or any remaining original Ferguson tractors? I mean, 80 or 90 years old, still around?
Well, that's the only one there, and the good news is, maybe your listeners and all hasn't heard it yet, the actual black tractor was in the Science Museum since the 60s, but the Ferguson family still owns the tractor, and they agreed to transfer, and it's now back in the Ulster Folk and Transport Museum at Cultural. For the first time in probably, what would it be, since 1936.
Okay, so it's back. It was in the Science Museum in London, and now it's back in Northern Ireland.
Right.
Okay, stay with us, because Joe Whelan, Joe, good afternoon, is in County Clare. Joe?
That's right, Kilrush County Kale.
Kilrush. And you have what you call a Massey Ferguson tractor museum.
Yeah, we have a Massey Ferguson tractor museum dedicated to the life of Massey Harry Ferguson.
And tell us about it.
Well, my family, we actually sell Ferguson and Massey Ferguson tractors for Clare, Limerick and Galway. We cover three counties, basically.
Great.
And after 57 years running the business, I retired some years ago, and I decided to build a dedicated factory, dedicated museum to Harry Ferguson's life.
Yeah.
So over the years, I would have restored several tractors, mostly.
Brilliant.
One tractor per year over a period of 50 years.
Brilliant.
And we bought the central creamery in County Clare, in West Clare. So we have converted into a museum dedicated to the life of Harry Ferguson.
And when did you open the museum? That's brilliant.
Well, we had the top man from Massey Ferguson, Middle East and European area, opened about 6 weeks ago.
Ah, congratulations.
So he came here to Kilrush together with some of our local politicians and 500 or 600 people present on the day. So we had a fantastic day.
And what's in the museum?
Well, basically, the development of the Ferguson tractor from about 1933 or 1934 on to the 1960s when Ferguson and Massey Harris joined in the 1950s to make the Massey Fergusons. So both sides of the family are there. The Ferguson side of the family is there. And then the amalgamation side with Massey Harris in Canada is also there. And each tractor is there for one reason, that they're all of a particular importance, because each of them tells the story and the development of the tractor.
Okay.
By the way,
all tractors
manufactured today are copied from the original Ferguson Brown tractors. We know it was designed built by Harry Ferguson, but the castings and so forth were made by David Brown.
David Brown also, and then didn't Harry try and set up a factory in Northern Ireland, but he was unsuccessful. And
what happened was that after the black prototype tractor, Harry Ferguson made a deal then with David Brown in Huddersfield.
Yeah, to manufacture.
And that was the Ferguson Brown then.
And Stephen, were you aware of this Joe Whelan's project in County Clare?
I heard of it, yes.
That's good. Okay, yeah. say with us. By the way, Joe, what is the oldest Massey Ferguson you have in the museum?
It's 1936, one of the early Ferguson tractors built with a three-point linkage, which the problem you had with tractors and Harry Ferguson was a very smart man.
Yeah.
He designed and built the first aeroplane that was flown in Ireland in 1910.
Wow.
And he won £100 of an award for flying the aircraft himself.
Yeah.
Highly intelligent man. He was of Scotch Presbyterian descent, very rigid in his way of life.
Yeah.
Like, we know most of these Northern Ireland Scotch Presbyterians became presidents of America and everything else. They were obviously highly intelligent people in their own way. But Harry Ferguson built the first plane and flew it himself in 1910. So he always had an idea that these big, cumbersome steam tractors that were there weighing up to 10 tonnes
put too much
ground pressure on the land and compressing it. So he said tractors should be lighter and much more efficient. So he built this first Ferguson tractor, which was unique because it carried the three-point linkage system. Now, before this, all the tractors that were supplied to England for the First and Second World War basically were known as widowmakers.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is the tractors, the implements were trailed behind your pull with a chain or maybe a single towing device.
Okay.
And if you hit the root of an ash tree or a protruding stone, the tractor rapidly come back over you and kill you.
Oh, so
the, if you wanted to get rid of the husband, you bought him a tractor.
And the original, the Ford tractor before they adopted the Ferguson method was called the Widowmaker.
Yeah.
Now, on Friday evening, last Friday evening, Joseph and Stephen, I was driving from Dublin to Waterford and I was somewhere between Enniscorthy and New Ross when I saw a tractor in front of me and that was going very slowly. It was an old tractor with an elderly man driving it and the reg number was 62 WX. 62. So that means that tractor has been on the road for 62 years.
Yes.
And would that, and Joe, would it more than likely, as a small tractor, would that have been a Massey Ferguson, do you think?
More than likely.
Okay, because, I'd love to find it. I'd love to find it. Who was driving the 62 WX Massey Ferguson on Friday? And I stay with us back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Stephen, given that there is a museum now opened 6 weeks ago in Clare, is there room for two museums on the island?
Sure, there would be, because there's so much, as we're saying there, with interest in Harry Ferguson and all.
Yeah.
You know, there's just that much, you know, and it's such an interesting story about Harry Ferguson's life himself, you know.
And he was born, Harry was born in 1884. And he died he died 2 years before that tractor that I saw on the road between Enniscorthy and New Ross was manufactured. He died in 1960, believe it or not. Where's Phil? Phil, did you get married on a tractor? Where's Phil? Okay, go back to Phil and say, Catherine O'Brien, Catherine. Are you there, Catherine?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Hiya, Joe.
What did you get for your 60th birthday?
I got a Ferguson tractor, a TE20, approximately 1947, for my birthday, that I probably sat on once, that my husband and sons and their friends thought would be a wonderful idea, and they use it all the time, and that's it. I mean, how could you beat that for a birthday present?
Wow! And if you and do you think how old is the tractor? Do you? I know you said go ahead.
No, they reckon around 1947.
Wow!
So the tractor is older than me. I will say that
here, and let that
right.
And in terms of a tractor, you're much more attractive than the tractor. I wager.
Check is in the post, Joe. Check is in the post.
Phil, where's Phil? Come in to me, Phil, on WhatsApp.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
You got married on a tractor, so to speak.
So to speak. I went to the church on my dad's Massey Ferguson 135 because the day we're getting married, nobody knew I was going on a tractor.
Yeah.
And my dad drove the tractor down because I live in a farm.
Right.
So,
brilliant.
We're going to the church and my dad drove the tractor and my mum and I went down in to the tractor.
Yeah.
So the night before we done up the tractor, we put an archway on it. We put flowers on it, a red carpet, and covered it in a white material. And we headed down the road for the church, the three of us. And we caused traffic jam kind of on the road and arrived at the church. And when people came out after the ceremony, they were all shocked and surprised to see the tractor. It was a big surprise. Then my husband and I were married. We came back up the road, back to the house, and we back up the road on the tractor. And my brother-in-law drove my husband's car to the reception then. So we had the Massey 135 on the road.
And do you mind me asking, Phil, where were you sitting?
On the transport box. It's an attachment that attached
at the
to
back.
The tractor.
I know.
At the back, yeah.
And was that comfortable?
Well, what we done was we covered the tractor with white material, red carpet, and two chairs from the kitchen. And my mum and I sat on the two chairs on the transport box.
And I presume the chairs were secure.
They were secure, yes, they were. We tied them.
Brilliant.
We tied them to the transport box and we headed down the road to the church.
And how old is the tractor?
The tractor's from the 1960s.
Oh, good God. So it's well over... Yeah. The one I saw on the road the other day was 62WX.
Yeah.
So and may the marriage last as long as the tractor, Phil. Please God. Okay. Okay. Well done. Well done. Stephen, thanks indeed of Stephen Patterson. His letter started it all. Joe Whelan, I have to see that museum. It sounds absolutely incredible. A labour of love. I love your passion. I absolutely love it. Whereabouts is in Kilrush in County Clare? Is it open every day, Joseph?
It's open every day, and in the centre of the town you can miss it.
Great. Good man. Keep it open. Keep it going. Keep it going, Joseph. Okay. That's a massive Ferguson Tractor Museum. You didn't know it existed. It only opened 6 weeks ago in County Clare. On sound, Pat O'Carney, broadcast coordinator Shane Gavin, producer Owen McLaughlin, Ray Darcy next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end-of-season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers and more. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.